from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
From Louisville Public Media. Support for this podcast comes from Kindred Healthcare, specializing in rehabilitation and long-term acute care services for 30 years. Questions about care after a hospital stay can be answered by speaking with a registered nurse at 1-866-KINDRED. And from KTC Building, seamlessly blending the classic character of older structures with 21st century amenities and technologies. Residential and commercial remodeling projects of any size. Details at KyleThompsonCompany.com.
One of the provisions of the 2018 federal farm bill made it legal to grow industrial hemp as an agricultural commodity after decades of the plant being listed as a controlled substance. Proponents say it has and will open new economic doors for Kentucky, which used to be a leading hemp producer. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on WFPL's In Conversation, we'll talk about industrial hemp, its many uses, and what's next now that Kentucky farmers will grow it legally. We'll be joined today by a hemp advocate and a scientist who's been studying the crop as a potential replacement for fossil fuels. We'll also talk about the new chapter of hemp with Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles. And we want to hear from you as we discuss industrial hemp this hour on WFPL's In Conversation.
This is a pivotal moment for the West End of Louisville, but is it revitalization or gentrification?
Any improvement they do around here has got to be better.
They're not really asking us, do we want it, do we need it, and can we benefit by it?
The rents are going to rise so fast that they're going to have to leave.
Here Today, a new podcast, will track the changes in West Louisville and how they affect the people who call it home. Follow us at heretodaypodcast.org.
Welcome to In Conversation. I'm Rick Howlett. We get program support from Kindred Healthcare. Today we're talking about industrial hemp. The hemp plant as an agricultural commodity has a long history here in Kentucky, dating back to the late 1700s, according to most historical accounts, it was first grown near Danville at around 1775. And for a large portion of the 1800s, Kentucky led the nation in hemp production for the textile industry. That distinction achieved, of course, on the backs of slave labor, which we'll talk about during this program. The hemp industry in Kentucky all but disappeared after World War II, and in 1970 it was declared a controlled substance, joining its narcotic cousin marijuana. But hemp started making a comeback a couple of decades ago, with advocates touting its numerous uses in everything from medicines to construction materials to food products. The federal farm bill passed in 2014 authorized institutions of higher education or state departments of agriculture in states that legalized hemp cultivation to regulate and conduct research and pilot programs. And then last year, more restrictions were lifted. As part of the new federal farm bill, hemp was effectively legalized and is poised, as advocates hope, to make a comeback as a commodity, especially here in Kentucky. And today we'll talk about hemp, the next chapter. And joining us is hemp advocate and entrepreneur Alyssa Erickson. She's the co-founder and principal at United Hemp Industries, co-founder at Kentucky Hempsters, which we'll ask her to explain in a moment, and founder of Kentucky Hemp Heritage Alliance and the Heritage Hemp Trail. Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Good to have you here. Also here in the studio with us is Dr. Jagannan Satyavolu. I didn't butcher that too bad, doctor. He is from the University of Louisville. He's been studying hemp's potential as a supplement to or a replacement for fossil fuels. And he is the biofuels theme leader at U of L's Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. And in a little while, we'll hear from Ryan Quarles, who's Kentucky's Commissioner of Agriculture, about what's transpired and what's ahead following the legalization of hemp. He was unable to join us live today, but I spoke with him a couple of days ago, and we'll hear that shortly. Of course, we want to hear from you. Have a question or comment about hemp or hemp products? Are you a hemp entrepreneur? We'd like to hear how it's going. Have you entered the hemp business because of the change in the law? Maybe you're thinking about doing it. Do you use hemp products? We want to hear from you. Call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can reach us through Twitter. Our handle is WFPL News, and we're on Facebook. So, first of all, let's make it clear the distinction between industrial hemp and marijuana. Alyssa, if you were to smoke hemp, it wouldn't do anything to you or for you, right? Except maybe make you sick.
Right. That's what we always say. It would definitely give you a pretty bad headache. I'm like, technically, you know, you can smoke anything.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's not going to give you any high. It causes no psychoactive effects.
And it doesn't contain the THC, which is the active, the narcotic chemical.
Correct. Legally, all crops that are considered industrial hemp have to contain less than 0.3% THC. So very, very small amounts, if any.
Now, you have several hemp-related enterprises or projects going on here with your business partner, Kirsten Boner. Tell us about them.
Sure. Oh, which one?
let's start with the one I mentioned, Kentucky Hempsters. Is that kind of where things got started?
Most people know us as Kentucky Hempsters now. That's kind of stuck. Funny, we launched that in 2014 amidst the passing of the Farm Bill and the launch of the pilot programs to start educating people about hemp, what it is, what it means to Kentucky, and what was happening with the revival and under the pilot program. And we thought Kentucky Hempsters was a fun kind of platform, social media way to start engaging people with that. And it stuck. It kind of took off. And I think people weren't receiving this information in any other form. So they got excited about it when we started talking about it and sharing that information.
And you are a co-founder and principal of United Hemp Industries. What is that?
So that's actually our licensed entity with the Department of Agriculture so that we can actually research hemp and work with farmers on hemp research and development.
And you're also involved with the, maybe historical aspect of this, the Kentucky Hemp Heritage Trail. What's that about?
Yes, absolutely. So it was really Kentucky's history that inspired us to become so passionate about hemp and bringing it back to its home, rightful home. So we launched the Kentucky Hemp Heritage Alliance. We do a bunch of initiatives to kind of preserve that hemp history and use that to educate people and get them kind of inspired about the renewed industry today. So they're actually the Heritage Hemp Trail. We facilitate that. It has 20 different sites featured on it, all within the Bluegrass region and in the counties and places that have that hemp history rooted in them.
So how did you get interested in hemp? Industrial hemp.
Definitely the history, but my business partner and I, Kirsten, we were in college and kind of re-fell in love with Kentucky for a while. I thought my whole plan was to get out of here and go to a bigger city I didn't appreciate Kentucky for what it was. So I wanted to stay here. Both of us were passionate about sustainability. We knew agriculture in Kentucky is obviously important. So kind of all those things added up and led to hemp, which again, the history of that and how important it was to Kentucky. It would seem like a no-brainer at the time. And one thing led to another. We're in the right place at the right time. Murray State University, where we graduated from, they were actually the first university to plant under the pilot program. And that was right when we were graduating. So things, again, just seemed to align, and we went for it.
I'm going to come back to you because you mentioned planting at Murray State University. And Dr. Satya Volu is here. And you've been involved with the planting of a hemp plot at the University of Louisville in order to study the plant. Tell us about that.
Well, at ConCenter, our focus has been on renewable energy and energy materials. And I focus on bio-based energy and biomaterials and what kind of opportunities we have economically to convert the biomass coming from these various crops into value-added products. And hemp, you know, as a multi-purpose crop, has been of very interest to us. Not only hemp, you know, we have something called Kenaf, which is also a bass fiber crop, you know, flax. You know, all these bass fiber crops have multi-purpose crops, and we have a lot of opportunities with these crops. And so our interest is to make sure that for the Kentucky farmers, you know, we provide the value-added opportunities. We hear quite a bit about CBD, but the benefits of hemp crop to the Kentucky's agricultural economy is beyond CBD. It is for food industry. You know, we have hemp seed oil coming from the seeds, which is rich in omega-3 fatty acids and good for the hot oil. And we also, there is also hemp protein coming from the seeds, which is a far better, far superior digestible product. And that protein has very high value. We have a local company here, you know, Victory Hemp Foods, that that makes these things and make this commercially available. So beyond these two, you know, we don't focus much on food applications at Conn Center. Our focus is on energy materials. So how do we make sure that this biomass is helpful in the sustainable manufacturing that we have so much manufacturing here in Kentucky? That's what our focus is.
Now, listen, let's come back to you. Let's talk about some of the products. And there are many, many uses for hemp, as we have learned. Tell me about some of the products that are taking off here in the early going.
Absolutely. CBD, definitely, as he mentioned, is right now driving this whole, well, the Kentucky Hemp Pilot Program, at this point, and kind of this nationwide drive for hemp, which is great. I mean, it's definitely causing a lot of excitement for and relief from a number of different things, from anxiety to, and again, these aren't FDA approved, so you know, we can only say so much. But we're hoping now that, again, the Farm Bill is passed and things like that, that we see more standards put in place and more studies done on the CBD and being able to legitimize those products. But beyond that, I mean, the food aspect, like he said, the hemp seed, the hemp protein, you can make hemp milk, and all those can be incorporated into your diet very easily because there are so many ways and products that they have for that. And then the industrial potential, from construction materials to car parts, door paneling, things like that, furniture even, upholstery, fiber. Really, the possibilities are endless. It's like the one thing you can't do with it is smoke and get high.
Now, you've been involved in hemp plantings, hemp meals, hemp demonstrations. I've seen some of the stuff on your website. So how receptive have people been now that it's been legal? Are they able to make the distinction between hemp and marijuana?
Right. Well, I think everyone now knows the cat's out of the bag. So and they're excited because they're seeing the progress. They're hearing about the returns on investments, the money coming back into Kentucky. You know, people are definitely more receptive. I think now it's just still breaking through some of those misconceptions and just the still confusion about what hemp is and what it's not, how it is genetically different, and just still how it differs from marijuana and things like that. So I think as far as the scared, you know, tactics and, you know, the reefer madness, I think those stigmas have kind of resolved a little bit. But now it's just the basic education and people understanding what hemp is.
And Dr. Satyavolu, what is it about the physical makeup of hemp that makes it desirable as a fuel that you've been studying?
Well, we look at the lignocellulosic biomass containing lignin, cellulose, and hemicellulose products. You know, that's what typical biomass is. In the case of hemp, it's a bast fiber crop. It has a outer layer of fiber, which is a long fiber, which is fairly, you know, as you said, mentioned in the introduction, you talked about in the textile applications, like a cottony-like texture to it. And then you have the inner core, which is called the herd. You know, so these two are fairly useful. You know, Kentucky especially, with the manufacturing, automotive sector is very critical to Kentucky. And you mentioned about lightweight composites. We are trying to kind of mileage reduction, the mileage, higher mileage cars. So that means we have to make lighter weight materials. Fibers are lighter weight materials that replace the polymer. And when you combine the fiber with the polymer, make the lightweight composites. I have some samples here. For example, we separate out various separate technologies to get the fiber out in a very clean form. These are like the cottony like fibers that we're talking about. These are the bast fibers, outside fibers.
And these are of various thicknesses and
various thicknesses, various processing. You make them into textile applications. You make them into composite applications, for example, make them into composites. And you put them into polymer to make them into filaments to go into 3D printing. So that means you have various materials you are making available for the manufacturers so that, you know, they can make into convert them into their various products.
You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPO. We're talking about industrial hemp and its various applications with Alyssa Erickson, who is a hemp advocate, and Dr. Jagannath Satyavolu from the University of Louisville. He is the biofuels theme leader at the University of Louisville's Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research. And we have some callers on hold. We're going to get to the phones after a break. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL.
We get support for In Conversation from our sponsor, Kindred Healthcare, specializing in rehabilitation and long-term acute care services for 30 years. Questions about care after a hospital stay can be answered by speaking with a registered nurse at 1-866-KINDRED.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. Today we're talking about industrial hemp, which is now legal to grow in Kentucky and across the country, thanks to the 2018 Farm Bill. Joining us are Alyssa Erickson, who is a hemp advocate, co-founder and principal at United Hemp Industries, co-founder of Kentucky Hempsters, founder of Kentucky Hemp Heritage Alliance and the Heritage Hemp Trail, and Dr. Jagannand Satyavolu is with us as well. He's given us the scientific view. He's biofuels theme leader at the University of Louisville's Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research, and they've been looking at hemp's viability as a fuel, among other things. We want to hear from you as well. What do you think about industrial hemp? Are you involved with it? Would you like to get involved with it? Are you using some of the many products that are made from industrial hemp? Call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're on Twitter, WFPL News is our handle, and we're also on Facebook. Let's go to Dallas from Louisville, who's been waiting. Hi, Dallas. What's on your mind?
I have recently bought some land, and I was thinking about growing hemp myself. But I want to do everything organically, and I haven't heard anyone talk about growing hemp organically. I want to know what the nuts and bolts of this are going to be.
You want to take that, Alyssa?
Sure. So actually, hemp is being grown organically. You'd need to get your land certified organic first. And beyond that, and the Kentucky Department of Agriculture, they have all this information. So once you start looking into actually getting your application to grow hemp, because that process is once a year, I would recommend looking into that and talking to them about that too. As far as processing, that's another story. As far as organic certifications for certain equipment, things like that, that's where it gets a little more tricky. But as far as producing organically certified hemp, you absolutely can, and you can talk to the Department of Agriculture about that.
Is there a limit on how much you can grow?
No. I mean, no. You when you apply to grow, you put how much you would like to grow, and then, you know, it's up to the Department of Agriculture's discretion whether or not, you know, they approve it.
Okay, Dallas, thanks for the call. Let's go to Steve in Southern Indiana. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I think it's great that this has been legalized. My question has to do with all the potential products that you guys are talking about. Why haven't we been able to see these things through an import market before the legalization?
Is that are they available from other countries?
Absolutely. So, yeah, a lot of our food are the hemp food products. Those are coming in from Canada, and that was actually a pretty big market, I think. The last numbers I read, you know, we're importing millions and billions of dollars worth of hemp products per year. And that was kind of a big push to bring hemp back to the United States, was because here we were importing all of this when we could be growing it. So the hemp foods is mostly what's being imported right now, and kind of was what established the market and come back for that.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. Let's go to Sean in Crestwood. Hi, Sean. What's on your mind?
Yes. I have degenerative spinal disease, and the medication I'm taking for it is probably going to kill me eventually. Already causes uncontrolled bleeding at times. So I've been looking at hemp oil for several years, and my question is, with the way the market is out there, how do I know the purity and the quality, because I know there's different components in hemp oil, without just guessing, because trying to go through a sample of each of the bottles of different brands of hemp oil could get very expensive.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that, Doctor?
Currently, the product I know in the market is the hemp seed oil, and it's a cold-pressed seed oil. And I don't know much about the quality of it, but that's the product.
I was going to say, I can speak on behalf of the CBD products. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
I think what you want to look at is companies producing CBD, they have they're supposed to get a certificate of analysis for their products. And you want a company that's being transparent and able to show those results. There's a company here in Kentucky, Ananda Hemp. They do batch tracking. So every product that they have, you can actually scan it and it takes you to a certificate online that tells you exactly what's in the product. So you know, again, no chemicals, pesticides, and I mean, you can literally look at the pedigree for that product. So if you're looking for a reputable company, that's one, you know, they're doing the best to be completely transparent. And that's the main thing. If a company is wanting you to see the results, they're talking about it, they can show them to you. You can feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I also want to mention that CBD oil is different from hemp seed oil.
Yes, so, yes, okay. Thank you. Absolutely. That's a big problem right now in the market is a lot of people are referring to CBD as hemp oil. And that, again, like you said, very different. That's a cold pressed from the seed versus the CBD, which is extracted. It goes through an extraction process from the flower or plant material.
CBD is, seed oil is from the seeds, cold pressing the seed oil. Right. It's readily available in the market, and there are no restrictions on using it.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, and we wish you all the best with your health. Thank you for calling. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Again, we're on Twitter, WFPL News is our handle, and we're on Facebook. Well, we talked about that a little bit with the Commissioner of Agriculture, Ryan Quarles, about potential FDA involvement now that industrial hemp is legal. Let's play our conversation with him from the other day.
Can you just give us a general overview of what's been going on here in Kentucky, especially in the agricultural sector, since the passage of the Farm Bill that effectively legalized hemp?
Since the passage of the Farm Bill, we've seen explosive growth in Kentucky's hemp industry. The number of farmers growing this crop has increased by nearly 500% in just 1 year, and the number of companies incorporated as hemp processors has more than doubled in just the past few months. We think that Kentucky is on a trajectory to sell over $100 million of Kentucky-grown, Kentucky-processed, Kentucky-proud hemp products this year in America.
What has been done regulatory speaking or legislatively speaking that you've had to do in the last 6 months to really get the ball rolling here?
Well, Kentucky has had a compliant hemp program for years now, and we didn't have to make too many changes to our currently existing program to be compliant with the 2018 Farm Bill. However, we have been dealing with glitches on behalf of the hemp industry as a whole, ranging from a hesitancy in the banking community to work with our farmers. We have also had a lot of communication with the FDA with their potential role with hemp-derived products. We want to make sure that the FDA does not regulate this business to death, especially as it gets off the ground. We have also have been vigorously working with the USDA and to assist them with setting up the federal framework. We're proud that Secretary Perdue regularly calls upon Kentucky for advice about how to implement the USDA hemp program. And another issue that we've been working on is in educating and also ensuring other states about the legal transportation of hemp products across state lines. We need to make sure that our hemp companies and farmers are treated fairly and equally compared to other agricultural crops in America.
And along those lines, I know there had previously been some concern among law enforcement about differentiating the hemp plant from narcotic marijuana, and it's grown in large quantities. So you've been working with law enforcement as well to work out a protocol in which they wouldn't be busting hemp growers or marijuana growers, wouldn't be disguising themselves as hemp farmers?
Correct. Since I took office, I pledged to work with law enforcement and repair a bridge to make sure that our hemp program and law enforcement are working together and that they have the information that they need and also have an understanding of how to run a legal hemp program while at the same time separating hemp from its illicit cousin.
What do you see at this point as we're just getting off the ground here, some of the major uses here in the early going for hemp?
The amount of variety of Kentucky-grown hemp products is vast and continues to grow. We're seeing hemp being turned into concrete. We have seen research with industrial application of the fibers with potential insulation and injection molding applications. We've also seen a growth in the grain industry where hemp grain and seed is being used not only for human consumption, but also as an oil seed to use the oil for cooking purposes, as well as natural lubricants. There's actually a company making makeup out of hemp grain as well. And of course, the vast majority of the hemp grown in Kentucky is for CBD production and other cannabinoids. CBD is one of about 100 different cannabinoids that we know of in the hemp plant, and CBD sales continue to surge. And we believe that the highest quality CBD products in America come from Kentucky-grown hemp.
Is hemp relatively easy to grow? I mean, is there much heavy lifting for a farmer to make the switch from, say, to tobacco or other crops?
There is an adjustment, but it depends on what you're growing the hemp for. If you're growing hemp for fiber or grain purposes, it's mainly mechanized, where you can convert existing farm equipment into an applicable planting and harvesting apparatus. I've seen combines cut through hemp grain pretty easily without too many modifications, and I've seen people use sickle mowers and roll hemp fiber into round bales using existing equipment. Now, CBD production, the methods of harvest vary, but a lot of it is still being harvested by hand, although there have been attempts to mechanize it as well. It's only a matter of time until our ingenious farmers figure out more efficient ways to harvest hemp for CBD production.
You touched on this a little earlier, but you have been working with the FDA and other federal officials in terms of concerns over regulating CBD products and the financial industry as well.
Correct. So there are a few glitches left. If you were to ask me what the biggest issue facing industrial hemp was a year ago, I'd say the federal law classifying hemp as a Schedule I narcotic. With the passage of the Farm Bill, we have now seen what I like to call growing pains in the industry, meaning institutions that may still have misperceptions or may not fully understand what hemp is, or more importantly, what hemp is not, have hesitancy understanding the crop. And so we're seeing our banking community trying to catch up and provide financial services for our hemp farmers and companies. We've seen unneeded interference with the interstate commerce of legal hemp products across state lines. And of course, the biggest issue facing hemp today is the uncertainty of what the FDA may or may not do to hemp-derived products. I sent a letter to them on May 31st, the day of the first public hearing, encouraging the FDA to be a constructive partner and to work with us and make sure that we get the policy right and not regulate this industry to death as it gets off the ground.
Now, the hemp provision in the Farm Bill was, of course, spearheaded by Senator Mitch McConnell and Congressman James Comer. So there was a big expectation that Kentucky farmers and entrepreneurs will take advantage of this opportunity. Clearly, there will be some competition from other states.
Correct. You know, Kentucky continues to lead the way not only on production, processing, but also on policymaking. We're proud to work with other states. Not a day goes by or my department is not contacted by other states with advice on how to get their enabling laws passed, how to work on the nuts and bolts of the implementation of a hemp program. And we take a lot of pride in that Kentucky's getting it right, which to me is no surprise because Kentucky chose to lead on this issue. And there are countless farmers today, like my family, who used to grow industrial hemp legally as recently as the 1940s. And so we have the heritage and culture that other states don't. And it's important to realize that the legalization of hemp was included in the Farm Bill by Leader McConnell because it had been grown in so many other states as well, and that was enough proof in the pudding to get it across the finish line in December of last year.
Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you for your time.
And I spoke with Commissioner Ryan Quarles earlier this week about the new era of industrial hemp that's underway with passage of the Farm Bill last December that made it legal to grow industrial hemp. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFBL. And we're back live in the studio. Alyssa Erickson is here, who is a hemp advocate, and Dr. Jagannath Satyavolu, who was studying the hemp plant, the various uses of it, mostly as a fuel. At the University of Louisville's Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research. And glad to have you back both with us live. We had a question, and I should have asked Commissioner Quarles this, but how is the state, Bruce wants to know, how the state plans to effectively regulate and track hemp production? And you said, Alyssa, if you want to grow some hemp, you need to get in touch with the Department of Agriculture. So there is a program in place.
Absolutely. And when you apply, as it currently is in place, it could change. You have to put your GPS coordinates of all of your farms where you'll be growing so that the Kentucky State Police, you know, Commissioner Quarles was talking about how they work hand in hand together. So whenever they do flyovers and stuff, they know exactly what farms are producing, where things are at. You know, so it's very, very strictly regulated and very kept up with.
And you have a plot, again, I think we mentioned this at the top of the program, Doctor. There is a plot at the University of Louisville right there on campus.
Yeah, we also applied and received a permit to grow hemp for research purposes on the university campus. And we work with the farmers, and our purpose is to grow fiber and seed and use it in our research.
502-814-TALK is our number if you have a question or comment about industrial hemp. We're also on Twitter at WFPL News, 502-814-8255. I also want to come back to you about the heritage of hemp, because we have, as we mentioned, it has a long history, and you go around to various areas around Kentucky where hemp has that history, and you honor the fact that a lot of the Kentucky's success in the hemp industry came on the backs of slave labor. You honor that and remember that.
Yeah, there's no sweeping that under the rug. Actually, we're very happy that this kind of gives that conversation a place. And, you know, we're proud to talk about hemp along with that and the good, the bad, the ugly. And we're excited. So we work with Farmington Historic Plantation here in Louisville. We're hosting a hemp dinner there July 11th. Shout out. But we're proud we'll be honoring actually some descendants of an enslaved family that was at Farmington. And so things like that to, again, honor and talk about it and bring it up and, again, kind of acknowledge that and then also just move forward in a better, more inspired direction.
Give us a little idea what's on the menu at a hemp dinner.
Oh, yum. actually, we're patiently waiting for this menu. In the past, we have had anything from hemp tabbouleh, from hemp crusted chicken, hemp pasta, hemp cornbread, hemp blueberry cobbler. Hemp again too has so many different food products, so it's really fun and easy to incorporate into all sorts of meals. We have Chef Adam Burris, who's a local chef here, has a number of restaurants and has been very successful, so we're really excited to have him coming up with some creative hemp food feast for us.
Are there certain regions of the state where hemp has been grown more successfully than others over the years?
Historically, definitely the bluegrass region was where production kind of centered. And now we're seeing more dispersion across Western Kentucky is especially kind of getting more active in hemp production.
We are talking all things industrial hemp with Alyssa Erickson, who is a hemp advocate, and Dr. Jagannath Satyavolu from the University of Louisville. And we'll be back to talk more after a break. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. In Conversation wouldn't be possible without you. To support the work we do, visit wfpl.org/supportinconversation or look for the link in our show notes. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we're talking about industrial hemp, its many, many uses, and the future of hemp as it has become legal in Kentucky and across the country thanks to the 2018 Farm Bill that was signed into law back in December. And here to talk about it are Alyssa Erickson, who is a hemp advocate. She is co-founder and principal at United Hemp Industries, co-founder of the Kentucky Hempsters, also founder of the Kentucky Hemp Heritage Alliance and Heritage Hemp Trail. Dr. Jagannath Satyavolu is here. He is from the University of Louisville, which has been studying the various uses of the hemp plant as part of the Kahn Center for Renewable Energy Research. And they actually have a plot growing at the University of Louisville. We'll talk more with him as well. We want to hear from you. What do you think about industrial hemp as a product, as a crop? Call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Our Twitter handle is WFPL News, and we're also on Facebook. And let's go out to Butchel and Jody. Hi, Jody. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. I was wondering, in Butchel and a lot of these pretty industrial neighborhoods, it's pretty much a sea of asphalt and a lot of big box stores that have closed. And I was wondering if there's been any thought to actually having urban indoor greenhouses for the production of hemp in some of these poor neighborhoods. I really think that it could really help the economy, and I was wondering if there was already work that had been done in studying it.
I'll let you, either one of you, tackle that. Is hemp going to be grown indoors?
Hemp is being grown indoors. To what extent, I can't necessarily say. You know, I think, again, if the market's calling for that and you can, there's some sort of infrastructure that can be put in place that, again, makes sense monetarily with the positive return on investment, then that would be a great idea. Again, just with production and how it is right now, I think we'll have to see sort of a level out of the industry and again, everything put in place before we see production taking place in urban areas, especially, again, just the way the program works. You know, you're not supposed to be in a certain area, distance of certain things. So things would have to change for that to happen. But I think it's a great idea.
Dr. Satyavolu, chemically or scientifically, does that make a difference if it's grown indoors or outdoors?
Not really. In terms of, again, as Alyssa said, it all depends on what the market is. You know, mostly indoor, you grow it for the CBD applications, mm-hmm. but for the fiber and seed, it's grown outside. Because the CBD crops they're low on the biomass yield. And for the fiber, we want them to grow outside and grow taller so that we plant them dense in the case of seed and mostly for the fiber. For the CBD, we grow them in a wider rows so that, you know, they have less biomass. It all depends on what the end use is, what the market application is.
And does hemp grow in, better in certain types of weather, certain climates here in Kentucky? Are there certain climates or certain weather types that it doesn't like?
Well, that's one of the strongest points of hemp is it doesn't need much of a fertilizer. You know, it grows on, it's easy to grow. And maybe Alyssa has more information on that in terms of what kind of soils are needed.
Yeah, I guess, again, too, what you're growing for, it depends a lot on. If you're growing CBD, you definitely want to look more into soil pH balance, things like that. Obviously, Kentucky is positioned perfectly for hemp, you know, just our soils, the silt loam, you know, the clay, what we have here in Kentucky is really what brought hemp here in the first place. So we're absolutely ready. But it is like a plant, and it does, you know, too much water and it gets too wet, you know, too little, you know, it does better in droughts than some other plants. But for the most part, it's still a plant and it needs to be treated like one.
Dr. Satyavolu, I have to ask you, you brought some various samples here of hemp fiber. There's a big bottle of white powder here. What is that?
Well, again, I also want to mention that this kind of hemp crop, it's a multipurpose crop, you know, can be a catalyst for a lot of startup businesses. You know, for example, this particular white powder is a sugar called xylose, mm-hmm. which is a low-calorie sugar, doesn't metabolize in the body. And we produce that from when we separate the bast fiber from the herd, you know, whatever the liquor comes out, from the liquor, we produce the sugar. again, there is a startup called Bioproducts that they're trying to license the technology and make this product. And then the fiber coming out, to you saw various qualities of fiber here, very coarse to very fine fiber. You know, some textile applications, you talked about hemp textiles, hemp roping. Rope is something that you don't need much of quality, but you know, you need to have the strength. So you can modify that to multiple applications depending on the market size. So you see a lot of qualities of fiber depending on where what the processing is done. And we also put them into, as I mentioned to you, 3D printing opportunities, which is a very growing business. Composites, you know, for the lightweight. And the market in Kentucky and you know, the automotive sector is fairly ripe for this kind of lightweight composite structures coming from hemp fiber.
Commissioner Quarles mentioned that there have been a number of applications for processing plants. How do they work? Does it depend on what's going to be made from the hemp?
You definitely have to go in knowing what you're going to be processing. Your fee is based on what you plan on processing. But the actually process is different than farmers. There's not a short window. You can actually become a processor, you know, apply whenever you're ready to be one. So unlike a farmer where you only have a short month period of time to get your application in or so.
This is kind of a naive question, but is hemp like tobacco? Does it have to be cured, or does it have to be hung up to dry and that sort of thing?
If you're growing for CBD, yes, you definitely need to dry it. And a lot of farmers are taking their tobacco models and trying to insert CBD in that. And we're seeing a lot of success with that, especially with the planting and different different modified ways of doing certain things. But it's definitely similar in that sense. For CBD production, fiber and grain, that's definitely more like a row crop.
502-814-TALK is our number if you want to get in on this conversation. 502-814-8255 as we're talking industrial hemp here on In Conversation on WFPL. We're on Twitter, too. You can send us a Twitter question or comment. WFPL News is our handle. And let's go to St. Matthews. Thomas. Hi, Thomas. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name's Thomas. Yes, thank you very much. I was curious about the concept of transitioning from pasture or corn or whatever to industrial hemp, what sort of expenses one might find. We've sort of gave up on tobacco years ago and was more interested in what types of return on investment one might expect and infrastructure costs. I mean, if you had a barn, obviously you could hang it. And obviously it would sound like CBD would be your most valuable use, but just sort of curious about returns on investment.
Unfortunately, there is no good answer for that. Mm-hmm. You know, the market right now is all over the place. There's no crop insurance still. There's no safety net. So, you know, most people thinking to get into this, I caution them and say, you know, definitely make sure this is a considered situation. If you're growing for CBD, the risk is more, and the financial input up front is going to be much more. But again, the return on investment would also be more. So again, it's all just a big gamble right now. And until the USDA and the FDA can really outline what they want from production going forward, it's hard to give you any sort of official number. And again, all the production that we've seen right now has been under this research program. So these numbers are based on that versus what the actual market is and what we'll see now that hemp has been legalized.
All right, let's go to Greg from Louisville. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Yeah, my question is about the use of industrial hemp for the production of toilet papers specifically, but just as a pulp that can be used for paper products. I had heard you specifically talk about that, but I'd heard some people talk about how that could replace the need for, you know, and for cutting down trees and whatnot, and how hemp grows so much faster and whatnot that you could, it's much more of a renewable sort of plant when it comes to the production of pulping material.
Well, good question. We haven't talked about that really, but it's viable as a paper product too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the quote that I say all the time is, I think 1 acre of hemp produces 4 times the amount of wood pulp that trees would. And again, you can grow 1 acre of hemp in 3 months versus trees that take, you know, upward 20, 25 years. So, and again, it produces that pulp. Back in even the early 1900s, they were talking about hemp herds for paper making. So this is not even a new concept. This is something we know we can do. At this point, it's just figuring out the manufacturing and the infrastructure to make something like that happen. But we're hoping, again, now that we're seeing legal hemp. We've got this legal industry that we're hoping in the next year or two we'll see more products like that coming out of this.
And hemp fiber, being a strong fiber, it goes into making some specialty papers. Tissue from herd, you know, is possible. But currency paper, you know, fairly high-quality writing papers, publishing paper, those are the kind of quality, high-quality papers. We need to look at the economics. And hemp processing of fibers is done differently compared to wood fibers.
502-814-TALK is our number. We're talking industrial hemp with Alyssa Erickson and Dr. Jagannath Satyavolu from the University of Louisville. And we would like for you to chime in as well, 502-814-8255. Let's go back to the phone and Scott from Louisville. Hi, Scott.
Hello. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to bring up the, you know, industrial hemp. Of course, Kentucky was the number one hemp producer for like 150 years, I understand, up until about World War II, for the main source of rope in the United States. And I think, I'm pretty sure, that the tobacco fields we have today that are perfectly suited to grow hemp. And as I understand, you can make more money growing hemp, of course, on a tobacco field than you can tobacco. And I believe a lot of places are subsidized by the government for not growing tobacco. And I'm just wondering if somehow that could be turned around so they could grow hemp in Kentucky.
What do you want to tackle that one?
I think that's the that's the concept of kind of this whole thing and why, you know, Senator McConnell got behind hemp so strongly. Representative Comer, I mean, that was the goal of hemp, was trying to help supplement the loss of tobacco in this state. As far as the extent of the subsidizing and all that stuff, I'm not sure where that's at, but I'm pretty confident that if something like that's possible, they will do that.
And we're 6 months into this, really.
Right. It's so new still.
All right. Ian has a Twitter question. Did the push for legalization and the further regulation of hemp stifle the conversation on medical cannabis? Good question. Or is that a whole different ballgame? We've done a different program on that, and we're really talking about their sort of related, but not really, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, they're the same. I mean, cannabis is cannabis. You know, hemp and marijuana are both species of cannabis. I don't think that I think that they're just very separate conversations at this point. In Kentucky right now, we really are focused on hemp production and getting that set in place. And I think, again, there's still that conversation happening, but I don't see it happening along with the hemp conversation. So they really are kind of separate.
Where's your research going, Dr. Satyavolu? Now that the new farm bill is in place, do you continue your growing program and your research program that you launched earlier?
Absolutely. From the replacing the transportation fuels, dropping transportation fuels, utilizing the complete biomass coming out, even when you grow hemp for CBD, you still have the biomass that basically need to be done something with it. This is not the kind of fiber you kind of till back into the soil, because it's a very strong fiber and doesn't deteriorate that easily. So it ropes quite a bit. So it has to be done something with it. Typically, farmers are burning it, and but it has a high value as a fiber. So we are continuing to work on various applications for fibers and turning them into biofuels. This xylose product that we talked about can be a source for going into plastics and fuels and everything else. So we continue to work on improving the quality of the fibers, improving the production of technologies to come up with various products. So.
All right, 502-814-TALK is our number. If you want to have a question or comment about industrial hemp, 502-814-8255. Tony is on the line from Louisville. Hi, Tony. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was calling to see if there was any way that there's going to be regulation of the production of CBD oil, because I'm sure there's outlets that sell pure oil than others, and I just wondered how that was going to be handled, and also if there would be any possibility of having state stores like they do up on the East Coast. They have state stores for liquor.
That's a good question. Thanks for your call, Tony. So we've talked about the FDA involvement, and we're still in the very early stages of this, still kind of wading through this.
Right, yeah, that's actually the big conversation with the FDA right now and CBD and how to regulate that. Since CBD can be derived from hemp and marijuana, the FDA at this point is trying to determine how to regulate CBD and what it is. Because again, once the CBD molecule is isolated from the plant, it's, you know, on itself just CBD. So again, technically, is it, you know, still marijuana or not? So the FDA is trying to figure all this out. That's the conversation right now. They're asking for public comment. They're having hearings. So we're hoping that here soon, those standards are set in place. They know how they want to regulate it, and we can move forward with legitimizing, again, CBD and the companies and the products and where they're coming from.
And the second part of Tony's question, how involved is the state getting in what you do? I mean, do you want the government to be more involved in your entrepreneurship?
Honestly, I think they're pretty involved at this point. You know, they have to know where I'm growing, how I'm growing, when I'm growing. They have to come out and test it. Still a lot of that is kind of causes some issues at coming harvest time and things like that. So the fact that they already have their hand on as much as they do, hey, I appreciate the Department of Agriculture by all means, and we couldn't do this without them. But I don't think they want any more responsibility, and I don't want them to have any more responsibility either.
Do you talk about the industry with people with to do what you do in other states? What other states are really getting heavily involved, like Kentucky?
I think a lot of other states are nearby us. We're seeing Tennessee's definitely picking up production, West Virginia, Virginia, and then, you know, of course, we've got Colorado, who already has, you know, the legal marijuana industry, and they're just as active in hemp production as well. Oregon. So I think those are kind of the top states right now in production.
Let's go back to the phone before we run out of time. Lee is on the line from LaGrange. Hi, Lee. What's on your mind? Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. It's line two. Excuse me. Hello, Lee. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Fine. Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm just curious I would like to know if the guest could explain the difference between isolate and full spectrum CBD.
Anybody, can you tackle that?
Yes. So CBD isolate is, again, the isolated molecule. It's just CBD purely, so it's going to be 99% just CBD. Full spectrum has a myriad of cannabinoids depending on the variety it's being extracted from. So there are still other cannabinoids like CBD plus CBGN and others that, again, are in there and help. People argue, you know, sometimes you need the full spectrum, so those cannabinoids synthesize together and create, a better therapeutic effect. Again, this is why we need studies. This is why we need regulations. This is why we need to learn more about CBD to know whether or not, you know, isolate on its own is fine, full spectrum, you know, what have you.
And very quickly, we have a comment from Tom. Hemp should be grown in the floodplain. It grows fast and would improve flood recovery. Would you agree with that?
It grows fast, but it also, I mentioned before, it doesn't like to get its feet wet. So there's going to be any flooding, it's not going to be able to do much because, again, it is a plant. So it needs dry soils and sunlight, and it needs all that good stuff. So you could try it. Let me know. Research and development.
All right. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thanks, Alyssa and Dr. Satyavolu, for joining us. We appreciate you being here today.
I want to thank
our In Conversation production team as well, Caitlin Jackson, Brad Yost, Ashley Clark Thompson, and Russell Wells. We're saying goodbye today to two journalists from our newsroom who contributed to this program as well. Ashley Stevens and Hank Zimmerman are departing, and we wish them well in their new endeavors. Our opening and closing theme was composed by Kojin Toshiro. Ryland Barton will be in next week as a special legislative session that possibly looms in Frankfurt. I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.
Next time on WFPL's In Conversation, public pensions. Governor Matt Bevin says he'll call a special legislative session to deal with a massive increase in pension costs for regional universities and other agencies. But a solution has been hard to come by, and employees are concerned about how changes could affect their benefits. We'll talk with lawmakers and others about the pension issue, and we want to hear what you think. In Conversation, Friday morning at 11 on 89.3 WFPL with program support from Kindred Healthcare.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.